Today on Marketing Mavericks, we talk with Tim Hayden and Tom Webster about mobile commerce, the second screen, and why CBS and HBO are moving to an online distribution. This and more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Marketing Mavericks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Marketing Mavericks is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own personal website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MM. This is Marketing Mavericks, episode 27, recorded Thursday, October 16th, 2014, The Mobile Commerce Revolution. Welcome to Marketing Mavericks here on TWiT TV. We talk about everything on this show for at the intersection of marketing and technology, whether it's mobile, how we're using our tech device, how we're watching content, creating content, and so much more. We break down the stories that are trending on the web, and we talk about how to be better marketers using the technology that we have at our fingertips today, how to build better relationships with our customers, and what not to do. Our guests today are both friends of the show. I've interviewed both of them in the past. Here they are together. Tom Webster, who's the Vice President of Strategy at Edison Research. Hold your hand up there, Tom. There you go. And Tim Hayden, who's the Principal Strategist at TTH Strategy. Welcome, boys, to the show.
Welcome. Welcome to us. Clipart handshake.
Yes. Thanks for having us.
And I think the term boys is appropriate because you guys are just a lot of fun. You know, we're men. But you guys do a lot of different things. Tom, just to break down what you do, you work, like I said, at Strategy for Edison Research. And you also have your own podcast, The Marketing Companion, and your blog, The Brand Savant, which kind of describes you. You're at Webby 2001 on Twitter. The Twitter. Are you still a big fan of the Twitter? I mean, Webby 2001.
I am still a big fan of the Twitter. I use it differentially from the other social platforms that I'm on, but I'm still a big fan of the Twitter.
Yeah, I don't have the conversations there that I used to, but certainly as a source of information for spreading information, learning things, I like it.
So, and Tim, that was Tim talking. You're the principal strategist at your agency. You've had a background in the agency world. You've been focused on mobile. We've talked many times in the past. You're at The Tim Hayden on Twitter, and you've both co-authored a book, which is one reason I have you back today, to talk about mobile strategy. Your book is Mobile Commerce Revolution, The Business Success in the Wireless World. Ooh, sounds kind of exciting.
It is. It's, I think, the most exciting book ever written.
Yeah, we hope to be a bestseller on the Thriller List.
Thriller List. Why aren't we taking full advantage, Anthony, of that background there, that green screen? I'll tell you what, we have a Godzilla back there. I don't know. Now, you guys are on campus today, right?
We are. We are here in Louisville, Kentucky, and on the campus of the beautiful Bellarmine University campus.
And what is your talk today?
We're here with the Louisville Digital Association, an event that Jason Falls, who you know,
yes,
chairs that organization. We had the opportunity today to speak to a group of a couple hundred people on exactly what the book's about, the mobile commerce revolution, how you can buy anything from anywhere thanks to wonderful technology.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to you earlier, Tim, and your Southern accent was super strong. And I know you're from Austin, but maybe it's like a little like deeper dive since you're actually further south, if you will, in the
Alpha. I've been drinking bourbon all day. That happens.
It's 8 a.m.
It's Jason's influence on you. Bad Jason.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So I know you've got this in the book, but tell us, why did you decide to write Mobile Commerce Revolution? What was the impetus? What made you decide to collaborate and put this book out?
Well, I think, I've been very passionate about how mobile changes the game for everything. I originally came at it from an event marketing perspective, and I think it's something that people just, if they only look at Google Analytics, which so many people do, they see this maybe 20% of traffic coming from mobile devices. It fundamentally changes how we find the things, discover the things, search for the things we want to buy, and ultimately how we buy them. And we thought talking about that behavior and so much of the technology that's enabling it was really an urgency. No one else has really written a book about both of those things. A lot of people talk about websites, apps, but no one really talks about changing behavior. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that interests me in it, because I have a different background than Tim. Tim is more of a mobile expert than I am, and that is consumer behavior. I'm a student of consumer behavior. I've been studying consumer behavior for 20 years now, researching the way people use technology and how their own behaviors change. And nothing has changed the humans any faster than mobile technology in the years that I've been doing this. Mobile technology has rewired humans to do things every day that they didn't even think they were, that were possible or that they wanted to do 5 years ago. Because, I mean, we're now, many of us are on our second or third smartphone. And the default behaviors that we are employing with our mobile devices are, again, you couldn't have even really imagined them 5 years ago for mainstream humans. So that's what fascinates me about it.
You talk about the growth of mobile, of course, in your book, as, you know, we are continuing to see growth, not just here in the United States, but serious global growth with mobile and how we're purchasing. Today's announcement with Apple, we talked a little bit about pay. I want to get into that in a little bit. But let's just talk about the growth of mobile in general from the standpoint of how people are connecting. And I think, you know, of course, most people now are using their mobile device to not only communicate on social media, make phone calls, which actually I barely use it for phone anymore, but texting, you know, staying connected. But we also use that while we're using other devices, whether it's our laptop or our iPad. And, you know, I will often be watching something on my computer and use my phone to look something up, or, you know, I'm out at a restaurant and I want to find out something. So we're using multiple screens in multiple places. How does that affect us as marketers? How are we keeping up with not only the growth, but how consumers are using it? It's a very confusing time right now.
Well, you know, I mean, keeping up with them that's a lost race already. And it doesn't matter. I think right now there are lots of technologies that may make it possible to follow someone from one device to another. But the problem is that the multiple channels, to your point, Tanya, you know, you can make phone calls, you can use an app, you can use social media, you have email, text messaging. And now with these contactless, you know, Bluetooth low energy, near field communications, there's just a growing myriad things that allow us to connect with not just people and media, the cloud per se, but also with other devices. And I think to say that you're going to try to catch up, or that you're going to keep up, or any agency that portends, or vendor who portends these days that they can, they're kidding themselves. The race was lost probably 18 months plus ago, and I think most people are doing very well just to be able to have people see their message at least once during the day.
Yeah, I think a technology strategy is a difficult thing to do. I spoke a couple of weeks ago to a small group of mid-sized company CEOs and presidents, and my charge was to help them come up with a five-year plan for mobile, which is a difficult thing to do if you're basing it on technology. I mean, 5 years ago, most of the people in the room that I spoke with did not have a smartphone, and if they did, it was a BlackBerry. So it's, you know, it's really difficult to project ahead with the technology. But one of the things that I think we do with the book, we wrote a book about mobile technology. It would have been obsolete the moment it was published. It would have been obsolete halfway through writing it. But we're really focused on mobile behavior and mobility, and what having a mobile device, could be a phone, doesn't have to be a phone, if you think about how that changes behavior, how that impacts behavior, and following those behaviors, that's really what we wanted to focus on in the book. And it's rethinking not just marketing, but holistically the entire company, operations, sales, and everything on down.
And that's, I want to talk about the organization as a whole and how the different pieces of an internal organization, whether it's HR, sales, to your point, I think there's a huge impact for sales and mobility. But let's talk about just even the demographics. I mean, you're into data. I love data. We all as marketers, I think, really like data. What about approaching this from a generation standpoint? So are the millennials using mobility the same way that, I don't know, baby boomers are? And what about, you know, our little guys out there that are using, you know, technology before they can even learn to speak? I mean, are we seeing different behaviors with the different generations? And as marketers, how do we factor that in?
Yeah, I mean, a friend of ours, Mitch Joel, often talks about how his very young child went up to their TV set one day and tried to resize the picture like he would his iPad. There's absolutely a demographic difference. But I think the key now with mobility and with mobile technology is it is such a mainstream behavior that, yes, there are going to continue to be laggards, just as there are going to continue to be early adopters. But we are seeing the mainstream middle America doing things with their phones that were probably unimaginable to them even just a few years ago. One of the studies that we put out a few months ago talked about the fact that most people now wake up to their cell phone. Their cell phone wakes their mobile phone wakes them up. These are people that used to wake up to a clock radio. They used to wake up to information or music, are now waking up to a noise, probably most of them to the same noise. And that just seemingly happened in just a few years. And is the first thing we do is we reach across to our nightstand, we pick up our phone. For many people, we check Facebook. It's the very first thing we do in the morning. So these are no longer necessarily, you know, millennial behaviors. They are behaviors of a mainstream populace.
And I think you could add to that it's a socioeconomic and cultural thing too. It transcends all lines, and it's no longer how it started off, where the haves and the have-nots. There was this great internet divide. You know, there was this great gap of people who had access to the internet and not. And those who could pay for it were the ones who had it. Now that you can have an all-you-can-eat data plan for $50 a month and be able to get a smartphone that does 80% plus of everything you can do on a computer, you're seeing people of all socioeconomic levels and across cultural, usually culturally divided lines, who are adopting the technology and using it for very utilitarian needs every day. The same things that many of us have taken for granted, having computers in our homes for years, they're being much more utilitarian and much more, I would say, ubiquitous in terms of how mobile is bringing more value or more efficiency to their lives.
There was a time, I remember, I'm dating myself here, but when some of your biggest challenges were trying to use cultural marketing from the standpoint of reaching different targeted demographics, and your print material had to have different images and different wording. Now it's so much more complicated. And you said that you advise brands and businesses on how to reach the different audiences. How much more complicated is that now that we're mobile and advertising has changed so much?
Well, it's in some ways it's more complicated, but in other ways it's dramatically simpler, right? You think about all the things that people in my profession do. We come up with demographic studies, we come up with audience segmentation studies, we come up with personas, all because we need to somehow take a swath at addressing people somewhat more efficiently, right? But the thing with the mobile device is the mobile device is the truly intimate technology. It's the thing that is always with you. It is the one true device for you that only you use. Other people might use my laptop. Other people might watch my TV. But this is for me. This is my first screen. And my phone number is as much a part of my identity now as my social security number, right? If I ever change carriers, I'm going to take my phone number with me. That is me. That is my identity. What mobile really enables is something far more simpler than all of these complications might portend, and that is true one-to-one interactions, the ability to actually interact with the human and not with, a millennial or an empty nester or all of these other distinctions that we have to do. Because a business that I choose to frequent, that I choose to give my custom, and that I trust with this relationship is now going to be able to directly have that relationship back with me by giving me things that I care about, by making my life easier in ways that are personal to me. So in some ways it's more complicated, but in others it's dramatically simpler.
How important is the content that we create in the play of this? Is it, I've heard you talk recently about HubSpot and their big IPO and the announcement, and they're definitely the gorilla in content creation and you know, inbound marketing. I've interviewed them many times, and they've continued to grow, and they're global in their offices as well. And you know, but yet at the same time, they spend a whole lot of money themselves on marketing, right? And what kind of example is that for us who are marketers? I mean, should we be spending a lot of money on our own marketing to market ourselves, or if we are a marketing agency, or are they doing it right? I guess that's my question for you.
I'm not going to say whether they're doing it right or wrong. I think what they're showing everybody is that you can't rely on any one thing. You can't rely on just making good content and hoping that it percolates out there. You know, distribution is a massive part of any content strategy, and you're going to see much more paid distribution, paid amplification. Those trends are only going to continue. You do have to market your marketing, but you can't hang up the grand opening shingle if the shelves are dusty, right? You've got to, and it goes without saying that you have to write good content, but you have to create content that is worth spending money to market.
Well, and I think, you know, as I had used the word utilitarian earlier, talking about maybe demographic or cultural use of technology, you know, the utility that mobility brings to make the delivery of your service, whether you're a marketing agency or you're a grocery store, the utility that you can now provide to your customers, it changes what marketing means. Customer service is probably more valuable, more important in the customer experience mix than it ever has been before. And I think that's challenging quite a few brands out there right now, because they still want to think that the marketing department is going to be the one who's responsible for driving traffic, when in fact it can be things that happen through operations or the ongoing support or service that a brand can provide to somebody. And I think in the service business, and in any business that is engaged with marketing historically, as a major way to drive leads or to sustain the business they have, they're having to rethink how they can make life easier, make it easier, made more direct, to Tom's point, for them to have that connection with their audience.
What about monetizing it for pay? So mobile wallet is launching. We've got several retailers that are jumping on board: Macy's, McDonald's, Disney, Walgreens, Target. And it's definitely going to change the way that that consumers purchase. Potentially, I could see this purchasing more, making it so much easier. What is your point of view on that?
Well, I think it goes a couple of different ways. I mean, you say mobile wallet's launching. Mobile wallet has been around for years now. And you look at PayPal, you look at what Google Wallet has done somewhat unsuccessfully, but PayPal and Square Order, that is, what was once Square Wallet, have already taught, depending on what market you're in, because they didn't launch everywhere, but depending on where you are, you'll see tens of thousands of people who've already enjoyed contactless payments or the store knowing who I am when I walk in the door, which I think there's a number of things, back to my earlier statement about operations. There are a number of things that type of technology is going to change in terms of the consumer expectation. I think the biggest thing about that Apple Pay, which I think is what you're referring to, Tanya, is the biggest thing that Apple can do is provide that added level of surety, because I'm not just getting communications from Apple that this is a thing. I'm also getting it from my bank, from Wells Fargo or Bank of America, but I'm also getting it from the retailer that I visit once a week or once a month. I think with all that, you're going to have more people who start to have confidence in sharing or using financial information to purchase things. And that becomes a threat, I think. Mm-hmm. It becomes a threat. If you think about it, if I can shop for my groceries without going to the grocery store, Instacart is a fine example of that, then the grocery store will lose out on that plus one, all those beautiful end caps and shelf talkers they have that have me going in with 10 things on my list but walking out with 15, that goes away if I'm able to just order the things that are on my list and have someone do my shopping for me and have it delivered to me. So I think, you know, there will be an imbalance at first. lots of stuff to figure out.
Yeah, there is a lot of stuff to figure out, but the, you know, there are certain ways that we're already being trained to do this, right? The Starbucks mobile app processes about, I think, 11% of their weekly transactions, which, you know, the Starbucks is what the economy of a significant second world country, right? So that's a significant amount of money that we're already being trained to use for mobile payments. And, you know, Tim made this point earlier today in the speech that he gave. What Starbucks did was figure out the humans. The humans were standing in line with a phone and with a wallet and having to put something away in order to finish their transaction. And Starbucks watched the humans and said, well, let's give the humans a free hand and let them pay with their phone. And I think, you know, security concerns and things like that, yeah, people are going to have them. But I don't know about you. I've had 5 debit cards replaced and sent to me over the past year. It's just a fact of life. And we're absolutely the surety of those transactions and our security is going to be a selling point for the companies that get it right. It's going to be a feature or benefit for the companies that get it right. Apple's had our credit cards for years. They've had them for the iTunes Music Store, the App Store. So I think, you know, they are one of the companies that's probably going to get it right. And we're just going to do it.
I am actually kind of looking forward to it. I do think you're right, though. I mean, I remember working with retailers who, you know, we would focus on how to bump up the basket and get more items at, you know, the register. And you're right. That is going to impact being able. But, you know, but there's we figured it out with, you know, brick and mortar retail. I don't understand why we wouldn't be able to figure that out mobily. I think there's certainly ways to upgrade and, you know, add more items onto the purchase, making the purchase higher. I mean, I see it all the time with online retailers, you know, suggesting the rug that I should get to go with my sofa or, you know, and popping up a chat to make sure I don't have any questions, inserting their, you know, how can I help you? I mean, Overstock's great at that. In fact, Overstock's done a very good job at really understanding the digital customer. In fact, Patrick Byrne, who's been on the show before, who's a big fan of digital currency and wanting to start up his own digital currency, has talked about what other retailers are doing wrong. And he singled out, we talked about Best Buy, actually, talking about how if he was approaching leading an organization that needs to evolve and change and understand the customer relationship better, he said, and I think I've heard you say this similar type of thing before, Tom, and maybe you too as well, Tim, but is that you have to answer the question why. What is it that the customer needs? So I guess my question to you is, who's actually doing it right? Who do we know that's actually saying, I get the customer and we are actually creating a business that answers the question why and solving to a problem that maybe no one else is solving?
Well,
they look at each other.
We're like an old married couple.
Did you leave the door? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I did. I'm sorry. Well, I was going to bring up the example of Level Up, which is a company that we have in Boston, and they're in Austin, I think, right?
In a few places,
In a few places, yeah. Level Up does something, I think, really wonderful. It's essentially a mobile payment app for local businesses. It comes up with a QR code. Local business has a scanner. And you, the business scans it, and you pay for your transaction. It's future-proof, frankly. And they save the business's money by batching transactions, I think once or twice a month, so they save on credit card transaction fees. But they do something else that's really, really valuable for the local business, and that is they give the local business a window into the individual consumer behavior that they've never had before. All, you know, the individual consumer to a local business has often just been a pile of credit card receipts. But now I have a direct relationship with that local business that says, you know, this person comes in, this exact human comes in twice a week, always orders this taco or generally this taco and an order of guacamole. Next time he comes in, let's give him a treat.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit, you guys, about a couple of things that have been in the news lately, including Virgin America, who has a new ad, and Facebook actually selling our location. But before we do that, I want to thank a sponsor of Marketing Mavericks, which is Squarespace.com. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy for you to create your own personal website and online portfolio. So let me tell you, I've been saying this before, but I was really given a hard time because I have a couple of different websites and both of them that I use the most often are pretty outdated. And I was intimidated, actually, to try to change my own websites. I was trying to hire people, and I made it so much more complicated than it needs to be. I had several people here at Twit tell me, Tanya, just try Squarespace. And finally, I did it. And I couldn't believe how easy it is. It's actually one of the easiest things that you could possibly use. And trust me, I'm not a, just because I'm in the technology or marketing space doesn't mean I create websites. I don't. And it was actually really easy for me. It was something I felt really comfortable actually showing my mom and friends of my family. There's a lot of reasons why they make it easy. They actually really take care of not just the front end design and all the beautiful images. In fact, they have 25 beautiful templates that you can start with. And they've recently added, get this, a logo creator tool. It's a basic tool for individuals and small businesses with limited resources. Not everybody has the bandwidth in their budget to hire a graphic designer or a web developer. And the logo creator is actually really cool. If you've ever wanted to have a logo, it makes it very easy for you to create your own. In fact, it's so easy to use. It's incredibly easy to use. But here's the thing. If you want some help, it's actually there for you. Squarespace has live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Plus, there is a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles, video workshops. Maybe you don't want to actually talk to somebody. They offer online tools for you as well. They want to make it easy. They know people are fairly intimidated by, you know, trying to do something that's on outside their comfort zone. This makes it super, super easy. And guess what? The one thing we all think at some point we might need, even if it's just a personal site, is e-commerce. Well, it's now available for all subscription plan levels, including the ability to accept donations. So your kids are trying to raise money for school. Maybe you work for a nonprofit. Maybe you have a wedding coming up or some other special event and you want people to be able to contribute. Now you can actually do that with the e-commerce tool that Squarespace offers. It's inexpensive, okay? It doesn't cost you a whole lot. It actually starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. It's mobile ready. We've been talking about that here on the show, being mobile. Well, the new Squarespace metric app on the iPhone and iPad allows you to check the site's stats like page views, unique visitors, social media follows. With a blog app, you can make text updates and tap to drag images to change layouts and monitor comments on the go. So if you're busy, which most of us are, it makes it easy to do. So here's the thing. Start a free 2-week trial with no credit card. That's right, no credit card. And you can start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code MM to get 10% off and to show your support of Marketing Mavericks. We thank Squarespace for their support of Marketing Mavericks. A better website awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Thanks again, Squarespace, and talk about being mobile ready and websites and that sort of thing. Lots of stuff in the news lately. In fact, you guys who focused on your book, I want to say to the people who are just joining, you actually have written a book, Mobile Commerce Revolution, The Business Success in a Wireless World. So before I forget, if somebody wants to pick up your book, maybe they want to download it, maybe they want to read, you know, read it online, maybe they want to buy, can they buy a hard copy or is it only digital?
No, that'll be a hard copy that you can buy either a Kindle version or a paperback. And I will have...
Ah, the book. I need to get a signed copy of that sucker.
The book itself.
The book itself, absolutely. Yeah, Barnes & Noble and Amazon will be the two outlets, both offline and in the stores and online as well.
So I want to talk about this really funny video that we had going around here at the office yesterday that Virgin America put out about, you guys both travel a lot, right? So you're constantly on airplanes. Virgin America, who's done a pretty fantastic job of marketing in the past, relating to customers, using the internet to connect with customers and listen to customers, came out with a video yesterday, actually almost six hours long, of a boring airline flight. And there was actually some clips of it on the internet too, just kind of the high points. And it was super fun. It was so simple, a little creepy, but super funny. Why is it that Virgin America is able to be so creative and really get us interested and make us love their product? I mean, they do such a great job. I don't know. I saw, do they do a great job? Is it just me? What do you think there, Tom? I heard the
They, That is the hmm of agreement. The hmm of disapproval is hmm. That's from Richard Branson's DNA. I mean, Richard Branson started with a record label and selling magazines. And what he has consistently done, and we don't have it so much here in the U.S., but he's reinvented personal finance. He's reinvented insurance. He's reinvented mobile carriers. He takes businesses that look like they are mature and kicks them in the tail. And that is just part of the virgin culture to be a maverick in that sense, apropos of the show's title. So, that's just cultural and ingrained as part of their brand. I mean, that's what virgin is.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no doubt about it. You Southwest Airlines has for years been able to do things, be profitable, that no other airline has been able to do. And people want to think that it's some great MBA mind that has put that together. And in fact, it's the cultural DNA of the company. I mean, you have companies and brands that you want to engage with on a more regular basis. You want to buy from them more frequently just because it feels good. And both of those are companies, obviously, both in the travel and the airline industry, but everything that they've done, they've been very pragmatic and extremely simple with everything they've done digitally. They haven't tried to go recreate any experience that they didn't need to. I think those are both fine examples of folks that have dove into social media, yes, but certainly the utility that mobile can bring to the flying experience by melding customer experience that works, that culture with what the technology enables.
So how then does the creative agency, who probably created this for them, work now with the brand in making sure that you're connecting with people? I mean, again, I saw this on the internet because somebody shared it with me, but it did really suit the brand message that they have, which is that you're going to have a better experience with us, unlike maybe some other airlines. And I think I will say the airline industry is a little different in that we kind of feel trapped, I think, to use certain airlines. It's not like some other options that we may have in retail or other types of consumption, but they still make me want to maybe spend a little bit more to fly their airline. How do the agencies work with the brands on coming up with strategy to stay on brand message?
You know, that it depends on
silence.
Well, for you to ask that question, Tanya, there is no universal answer. I think a lot of something we talk about in the book is the importance of going offline, looking not at the performance of media, which is what most digital analytics tools will give you, is just how is my email, how is what I'm putting from a content standpoint into social media or YouTube, how is that performing in terms of people watching it, clicking it, sharing it, but actually getting out of your chair, getting out of the office, and surveys, yes, but actually observing customers and understanding something that you said earlier, Tanya, you know, why do people like the brand? Why do they love the brand? And I think that's increasingly the agency's responsibility, is not to sit there and look at what Nielsen, Forrester, ComScore tell them in terms of what people do with their devices and with media, but to actually go see specific to a brand and its products. Why do people use them, and how do they acquire them, and what is it they love about them? Why do they keep coming back? And then speaking to that through messaging, through media.
Well, and again, and I don't want to denigrate or belittle what Virgin has done here, because they've obviously done something very clever, but this is historically what that company does, is it enters markets where there are mature players that are perceived as a commodity. And it's almost blue ocean what they can do. I mean, for most people, air travel is a utility. It's a way to get from point A to point B. And what Virgin successfully does, and I would argue Southwest did this better in its early days than maybe it does now, is that it makes the plane itself aspirational. It's done this with financial services. It's done this with insurance. They take spaces where the product is treated like a commodity and makes them aspirational.
CBS announced, HBO, I think the day before, announced that they're actually going to start offering content online, separate from their traditional terrestrial, like normal cable options. And in fact, HBO is going to, I think, offer HBO Go sometime next year. CBS is going to offer in the major markets, I think 14 major markets, they're going to offer their services online as well, which I think is preemptive to maybe some other things that might be coming. And I was really excited about HBO, and then even more excited, I think, in some ways about CBS, because if you think about events like the Grammys, which happens every spring, and you have to actually have traditional cable to watch these events. You can watch the pre-show, you can follow online, and there's extra content that they offer. But the biggest argument that Evan Green has given me in the past as to why they don't offer the Grammys online is advertising dollars. Yet here we go. They're going to be offering their content online. What was the shift? What happened that finally made them say, because I've been asking for this, I know we all have for a long time, and now they're doing it. How's that going to change advertising?
Well, I think you're... I think you have a couple of things that are happening there. There's the general consumption. HBO Go has an incredibly successful mobile app that allows people to, subscribers to be able to, right now, cable subscribers, to be able to watch HBO programming from a tablet, from a computer even, but from a tablet mainly right now. You walk down the aisle, let's go back to the airline again. You walk down the aisle of a 30-minute plus flight, and you will see a probably growing majority of people on that flight who've got a tablet and they're watching some type of video on it or playing games at least. It's not going to be hard to for them as a media company or as a media entity to start to talk about who the people are that are watching their programs and how they can monetize that for advertisers. It'll be everything from in-program product placement to little banner ads or little small, probably everything from 30-second to 10-second little messages they get. You probably see that a lot when you watch TV on your couch at home, where there's advertising happening at the bottom of the screen as a watermark almost that is on top of the program. So it's happening more and more. And I just want to say real quick, I'm living in Austin, Texas right now, where AT&T has launched Gigapower and Google Fiber is coming with a force. Time Warner Cable / Cox has already given us Wi-Fi throughout the city. If you're you can roam and pay a fee if you want to use it. But if you're a Time Warner Cable customer, you've got Wi-Fi throughout the city of Austin now. I think everyone's understanding that it's just going to be a different channel through which people get that same content they were getting before. I think that the challenge to advertisers is just making sure that the message and the placement, the spot, is optimized for not just the device and the connectivity, but also for the contextual opportunities that that brings.
I've been waiting for this for so long. My background is cable television and working on the content side as well as the provider side, and I've thought this was long, long, long overdue, but everything seems to take forever and doesn't happen as quickly as we'd like for it to. But yet we have been seeing this evolution of internet-based content. I know, Tom, you've talked about this and you've worked with people in this space. Leo Laporte, has been a pioneer in creating internet-based network content versus traditional cable. What do you think is happening in this space? Is this getting ready to be a huge shift? Are we getting ready to see it all happen slowly? Or is everything going to start now that we've had some people finally tip their hat or throw their hat in the ring with HBO and CBS? Are we going to see more and more happen quickly? Or is this going to be still a slow transition?
No, it's going to happen more and more quickly, I think, because it's what the people want. For example, when Netflix released all of, the Kevin Spacey thing. House of Cards.
House of Cards, yes.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yes.
When they released all of House of Cards at once, I know, he doesn't let me out very often. That was satisfying a basic human need, which is that they wanted, that people do binge watch and power watch. One of the greatest myths, I think, is that our attention span is getting limited. What is happening is we are releasing more and more bite-sized pieces of content. It becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy. But how many people bought the Lost DVD set back in the day and power watched the whole thing? It's good content. People want to watch it exactly how they want to watch it. And I think what you're going to see is increasingly, as more and more great mainstream content becomes available that way, that, it used to be that analog dollars were replaced with digital pennies. So those digital pennies are going to start to become dimes and quarters, because that is now a premium experience. When I can get it on the device I want to be able to watch it when and where I want to, that is a premium experience, A. And B, it increases adoption of the media in general, right? In podcasts, you mentioned, you know, Leo was certainly one of the pioneers in podcasting. Podcast consumption went way up when we started to be able to get a frictionless mobile experience to listen to them because we could take them with us. You always could take them with you, but when that became frictionless, we began to use the medium in opportunities and environments where previously audio and video may not have even been consumed. So as this happens more and more, the actual consumption of media is going to continue to go up.
But you talk about binge watching, which I notoriously do, just like everybody else. I just finished shamelessly watching Californication. And I could, you know, you just watch as long as you can. And then you just like, as soon as you can, you start watching again and you watch it all the way through. And if you watch it on Netflix, you watch it commercial free, but you're paying for a subscription. But again, we're minus advertising. So what's filling the advertising dollars? Are we going to be advertisement free? Are we going to be commercial free? And like Hulu, which, you know, it's annoying to have your programming interrupted with some sort of, and I'm a Hulu Plus subscriber, but I still have to put up with advertising. I don't like it. I'd rather watch Netflix or another service. How is that going to change the way that we see traditional commercials via internet-based content?
Well, I mean, a number of things. I'm sure Tim has some things to throw in as well. But number one, we are now paying for content, right? We always pay for content. We pay for it with our money or we pay for it with our attention. But what we are seeing more and more is that we are, in fact, paying for content. There are several shows on the TV that I pay iTunes to watch simply out of convenience. I'm not home very much, so I will power watch a few episodes or something, and I pay for the privilege to do that. And I think also you're going to see, you know, the buzzword that we love throwing around, native advertising, is not just for content marketers. I mean, product placements are now insidious in a lot of the content that we watch and consume, and a lot of it's getting funded that way too.
Yeah, I mean, I think you see some of the things like BMW has done in the past with BMW Films. Giving people the content they want while having it be basically a showcase for their product and the performance of the product. More and more, it changes from just that simple product placement that you see that everyone's using a Dell monitor or everyone's using Dawn to clean their dishes. It becomes more of that branded content, that storytelling. So I think that'll be part of the mix for sure. I think every brand has got a unique story about the founding of the company, about the original vision, about the behind the scenes of how things are done. I think there are a number of options in terms of what you want to do to give people the content that they want. It just won't be limited, I think, is what we're both saying. Yeah. Is it won't be limited to some people in Hollywood or New York who just happen to be great screenwriters or producers.
And advertising isn't going away anytime soon.
No, it's not. And you do have to pay for the ability to be able to provide content, to create, you know, I mean, this doesn't come free to the people that are actually producing it and offering it. That said, it's changing the way that our transactions are made, right? Or is it? I mean, so, okay. We talked about Virgin. We talked about other brands that we liked. You talked about BMW. We talk about people who are being creative on the internet and giving us an experience where we feel like we have a relationship with them. But do we see the numbers behind it? Tom, you're the numbers guy. I mean, are we seeing the data to support this feel-good, fun advertising that's relating into actual sales?
Well, there's a measurement challenge, right? A lot of those things are not going to show up in Google Analytics. You actually have to talk to the humans to be able to get that, because there's a fundamental disconnect between online measures and offline measures. If I'm aware of something, that is an offline measure. Google Analytics is not going to tell you that. So, you know, part of the challenge is less that the data isn't there as much as it is going to the length to get the data, right? Because it is actually, it's not impossible data to get. It's not rocket surgery to get that data. That's the kind of work that my company does all the time. But it's not as easy to get. So, I mean, the returns are there. They're going to continue to be there. But whether they are or they aren't, doesn't matter, because that's what the consumers want. And what the consumers want will always dictate the market. And so they're going to have to be loss leaders for a while as we continue to figure this out, but it isn't going to change.
I want to explain some things that actually came up in chat as questions, because we tend to get a little jargony from time to time because we're used to just talking about a variety of things. Native advertising, for example. The question came up, what is native advertising? How do you explain that?
That's one of my favorite topics because I think people have varying definitions of it, and they're all wrong, except for me. That's not exactly true. No, native advertising is an ad that is reflective of and truly inhabits the environment that it's in, right? It's not an advertorial necessarily, but if, for example, one of our clients is Pandora, there are audio spots on Pandora, right? Now, you could take the audio spot that you have on your national radio buy and plunk it into Pandora, or you could acknowledge the fact that this person is listening to Pandora, and you could tailor that spot to reflect the fact that they are listening to it on Pandora, which they in fact do. The ads are different. They will they talk to me as a Pandora listener specifically. That's native advertising, and there are a lot of, you know, as I said, varying definitions of that. But I think when you work within the environment, the content environment that you are given, and you acknowledge that content environment, that's native advertising, or as I like to call it, good advertising.
That makes sense. We've actually talked about Pandora here on the show. We actually had Heidi Browning here talking about what they're doing. And you've got other services like Spotify and a variety. I mean, there's a lot of different types of ways to consume music content. And I have to admit, I still pay for Sirius for satellite radio. I have satellite radio in my car. But other options are using a service like Pandora and connecting it to your mobile device. Are we seeing a really big shift away from, you know, not just FM AM radio, which I've been on in the past, but also satellite radio? I mean, I kind of hesitated on renewing my subscription again this like a week ago, thinking, well, why am I not just using Pandora or other types of services? I mean, do we want everything? Or are we seeing a transition?
Well, you know, there's two things that are happening. First of all, the reach of broadcast radio, AM FM radio, remains as high as it's ever been. The reach of Sirius XM remains as high as it's ever been. They continue to add subscribers. The audio pie is changing a little bit, right? I mean, there's significant amounts of listening going to Pandora, and it's not all cannibalizing. What's happening is, again, thanks to mobile phones and the increased opportunities to consume content, we're actually consuming more, specifically in this instance, we're consuming more audio than we used to. So the audio pie has grown. The portion of that pie that goes to services like Pandora and Spotify, who are both clients of ours, and some other services, they are also growing. But the fact is, it's a golden era for audio. I mean, I don't exaggerate when I say that. It is a golden era for audio because we can consume audio while we are doing other things. And we do, in fact, consume audio while we're doing other things, everything from driving to shopping to watching TV sometimes, or to doing our homework,
out,
or reading,
whatever, maybe,
working out. Yeah, so we have those opportunities now everywhere.
Well, I want to have maybe a whole show again where we bring on Heidi and we talk more about kind of this evolution of advertising and how Pandora's model is different than Spotify and how those are working. That's a whole nother conversation, but we're running out of time, and I appreciate you guys joining us, and you're at this event. I know you have another panel coming up pretty soon. If somebody wants to follow you, Tim Hayden, check out your book, check out what you're doing, follow you on the Twitter. What's the best way they can do that?
Well, quite simply, my Twitter handle, @TheTimHayden. I'm there every day, and I respond to pretty much anybody who wants to tweet at me.
Tweet at you.
Tweet at you.
Tweet at me.
On the Twitter.
On the Twitter.
On the Twitter. And I'm @Webby2001, which was my AOL handle some years ago. Or you can reach me at CompuServe at 75637, 75829.
You're bad. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Have fun at your conference. And we will definitely be in touch. I want people to check out your book. We'll be sure to push that as well as more. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you, Tanya.
Absolutely. That was Tom Webster and Tim Hayden. Their book, if you want to check it out, is Mobile Commerce Revolution. It's the business success in a wireless world. It's chocked full of great information. Tom has his own podcast you should consider following. And And he also has, they both have blogs. They're both pretty active guys, and they have really interesting points of view on mobile strategy. I want to thank them. If you guys want to connect with this show, you can, and maybe there's some ideas, and I see them pop up in the chat all the time. We can't always get to them, but if you email me, yep, old school email actually works with me. You can email me at Mavericks, M-A-V-E-R-I-C-K-S, at twit.tv. I will answer. I certainly read them as well. And if you've got a great idea, we want to mention it here on the show. Or maybe you want to follow me on the Twitter. I like Twitter. It's at Tanya Hall Radio on Twitter. I know I need to drop the radio. I'm working on it. And if you want to connect with me on Facebook, I post things that I find interesting in the social and marketing space. I'm happy to connect with you there. You can find me at Tanya Hall Radio or Barzini on the web. Thanks, everybody, listening to this episode of Marketing Mavericks. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you next week.